Hi, and welcome to the Secret Best Friends Club. Secret Best Friends Club.
Secret Best Friends Club.
I guess we could do some introductions first.
Absolutely.
You are Kyle.
I am Kyle.
Kyle is a teacher. As a profession?
Right. I teach second grade.
Uh-huh.
And I also make video games, and I parent.
Right. Weird. We are both parents. My name is Chris. I am a user experience designer by profession, but I also make video games. And so in Secret Best Friends Club, we are going to talk primarily about video games, but mostly we're just going to talk to each other about things that interest us.
Right.
Which hopefully you like that.
I'm nodding my head.
Okay, yes. He has been instructed to dictate all of his bodily movements because this is not a video podcast, this is an audio podcast.
Still nodding my head.
Still nodding his head. Great. You listening to this right now, you are also a part of the Secret Best Friends Club, so I hope that you feel, I don't know, not privileged.
Incorporated?
Incorporated. Yeah.
What's the word for when you, like, somebody's, like, enacting a secret ritual with you, like, for the first time? There's a specific word for it.
Indoctrinate, no.
No, that's the wrong word.
It's like when you're a mason and you're shown
the exactly.
Secrets.
Initiated. There we are.
Yes, welcome to the Secret Best Friends Club.
Initiation.
Initiation podcast, the first one. Hopefully we'll try to make it a regular thing. We don't know. Anyway. So this week, as a central topic, I thought it would be interesting to talk about game feel. Mm-hmm. So for Christmas, Kyle got a Superboy, little handheld
yes.
Super Nintendo system, because I had a Superboy, and I wanted to share that with all of my friends, because it's an amazing thing. It's a hardware emulator, essentially, and you can use the original Super Nintendo and Super Famicom cartridges on it.
Yes. Bedtime has now become a Super Famicom / Super Nintendo bedtime as a result.
And there's something just very, like, joyous about being able to put in your original cartridge that you probably already have, and then, you know, boot up Super Mario World just like you remember it.
The physicality of the ritual is really important. It's marvelous to engage in a physical process to say, with anticipation, I'm doing a physical act right now, even if that act is playing a video game.
Right, well, it's, you know, it increases mindfulness in
Absolutely.
The experience. You know, it's kind of like why, you know, we like to listen to vinyl, like the hipsters we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a ritual.
Yes.
For one, it's you take out you select the album from your carefully curated, you know, set of albums, and then you go and you regard the art, and you take it out of its slipcase, and you blow on it and clean it off, and then
mm-hmm.
you place it on its pedestal, and then you know put the needle on and everything.
Or you, like, talk a 4-year-old into doing those things. Like, you say, like, here, like, hold it only on the edges. No, hold it only on the edges. And then you
right.
say, hold it only on the edges.
And then they lick it.
And then you say, hold it only on the edges. And it's very, it's, that's my final ritual, like, right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, through parenting, you know, we have a greater appreciation for our rituals and our physical objects. So the Super Nintendo cartridges are very, is a cool ritual. So, but also, you and I, we have different game catalog backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you have indicated that you're very much more into, like, the shooters and,
mm-hmm.
like, the wacky platformers or whatever.
I'm nodding my head.
Yeah, he's nodding his head again. verified. And I was more into, I guess, RPGs and the Zelda-style adventure games and Super Mario RPG and that kind of thing. So you had never played a game that is one of my favorite games called ActRaiser.
Right.
ActRaiser is a game that was a launch title for the Super Nintendo in the States. It was developed by Enix back before it was Square Enix. And it was utilizing the Super Nintendo technology in a very interesting way. There was a tech called Mode 7, which was kind of like a, I don't know, like a sprite mapping technology
mm-hmm.
that allowed you to do interesting 3D effects and zoom effects.
Right, right.
You might have seen it in Super Mario World when things fly at the screen or, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think Star Fox is, like, my Mode 7, like, thinking. Didn't
yeah.
Star Fox use Mode 7 for the Or was that a Super FX?
It was a Super FX. So that was a special chip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pilot Wings was a good example of
there we go.
Mode 7. Yeah. It's like, I want to display a plane in a pseudo 3D space with, like, sprites on top of it. Anyway, so ActRaiser is a very, very interesting, very particular game. Kind of glossed over in history a little bit. So why don't... I want to hear your description of the game, because you'd never played it. You know,
right.
I grew up with it. So what is your initial impression of the game, with all of the knowledge of, like, the, you know, 20 years plus history that you have built up of game knowledge?
Sure. So when I started this game up, it has lovely music, and so it's very evocative, and the title screen comes spinning out of the blackness, which actually takes a little while, so
yeah.
It took me a while to realize that the cartridge was working, and so I spent a lot of time fiddling with it, because it's just very patient and doing its introductory sequence, which is nice. It's nice to have that kind of restraint in a video game cartridge. So you start it up, and you name yourself, and I think that that's always exciting when you get to name yourself. There's
yeah.
a real Legend of Zelda feeling of naming yourself, even though I guess we were supposed to name ourselves Link, it turns out, but I was really excited to name myself for ActRaiser.
Yeah, whenever I saw, like, a game that allowed you to name yourself, like,
mm-hmm.
even back in the NES, like, Zelda days or whatever, to me it was a marker of a deeper kind of game experience.
Oh, totally. It signals to you that you're getting in deep. You're about to, like, embark on this really engrossing, identity-defining, like, kind of experience.
At the very least, the developers took the time to design a font, and they're going to use it for dialogue, and you're going to read some dialogue.
Now, you are going to do some reading. This
yes.
is a reading game.
It's a good game.
Yeah, so you name yourself an ActRaiser, and then it just kind of plonks you into a menu, and you're in this kind of sky temple sort of thing. You're looking at these, like, these lusciously animated clouds, like, going by. It's very serene, and you're sort of thinking, well, now what?
There's a cherub there.
Yeah, there's a cherub, and it's just kind of looking at you expectantly. Weirdly for me, the touchstone was actually, like, Peter Molyneux's Black and White. Like,
oh,
it felt so much like Black and White, where I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally a god. This is my little god angel that I'm going to be maneuvering through these various challenges.
Yeah, it is definitely a very, very Peter Molyneux style game.
Yeah, it feels a lot like that. It feels like a Populous or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just, it has a similar feeling to it. So it took me a while to, like, because I like to make sure that I'm not missing anything. So I went through every single menu and looked at all these inscrutable titles and finally landed on the one that goes through this big Mode 7 transformation where you look at the overhead map of the world that starts spinning and it zooms into it and it feels very, like...
It's got very sweeping, epic music.
Here we go!
Yeah.
It's what you're doing is you're going to suddenly become a living statue and you're just going to beat everybody up.
Right.
Because people have stopped believing in you as a god. And this is a really good way to get attention as a god. If you find yourselves to be in a place where people don't know who you are, you possess a statue and you just destroy everything.
These are good god tips.
Yeah, I think so. And ActRaiser really, like, embodied for me the feeling of, like, reclaiming this this prior area of worship. So you go through the side-scroller sort of... you compared it kind of to Ghosts and Goblins if it was good.
Yeah, yeah, if it were good, yeah.
If it was good. Like, if it felt fair.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of Altered Beast, almost.
Yeah, just very big, exaggerated sprites, especially
yeah.
for the player
yeah.
character.
You are this beefy statue.
You got this big sword.
You are wrecking stuff.
Very effective.
You were just... You press the button to wreck things, and they get wrecked.
Yeah, the wreck
just,
button.
The wreck button is so good.
Yeah.
Really good wreck button usage.
Yeah, so this is the first, like, your first sort of encounter with the gameplay mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because it's very arcade-like.
Yes.
You know, you can tell that it is inspired by, like, Altered Beast and that kind of stuff. It's very crunchy. Like, there's a very distinct game feel to this game, especially when you swing the wreck button. When you're swinging the sword and you hit a creature or something like that, and, you know, you get an apple. It's always an apple to regain your life. Like, every single beat and every single sound and flash of light and sprite movement is...
It feels like crunching into an apple.
Like, it does feel like... Yeah.
That's what it feels like, I think.
It all comes together to make this really great...
Or maybe like hitting an apple with a hammer.
I don't know if I've ever hit an apple with a hammer.
I recommend it.
I should probably do that. But it just, it's very solid. And then, you know, the pacing is very good, and you get to the very end and it's like the centaur guy, and
yeah.
you defeat him and, you know, you become a statue again.
You do. This is the reward for doing well in the game. And during these action sequences, as you become a statue again, and then people build you a nice temple,
mm-hmm.
and then the game suddenly becomes like SimCity lights. It's really exciting. You get to spend more time marveling at the really nice panning map of the overworld. You fly around as a little cherub and shoot things with arrows.
It's a very distinct genre mashup, and I don't think a lot of games were doing that at the time, where it's like, you know, they're either, it's a SimCity game, it's a sim mm-hmm. game through and through, or it's a, you know, it's an arcade-style beat-em-up and brawler or whatever, but this is, like, both of those at the same time.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, like, if it were released today that it would have...
Can you imagine pitching this game?
Yeah, no, you wouldn't be able to pitch this,
like,
to any big
seriously.
Company necessarily. Maybe as an indie game. It would probably find indie success.
You're like, but even the description of the game, where it's like, well, you start off and it's like a very like distinct like action side scroller from the 16-bit era, because we have eras in video games now, so you'd say the 16-bit era.
Right.
And then it just abruptly shifts to being an overhead city simulation and population management game with some mild RPG elements. Like, it sounds like Stone Soup is what it sounds like. It
yeah.
sounds like so many things that are disparate that they couldn't possibly work together. But there's a real sense of, like, anchoring yourself in these very physical locations and really taking care of these people and watching them build their civilization, and it all feeds back into your powers as a god. It's very satisfying.
So what do you think in ActRaiser really makes the game feel like ActRaiser? But like, what is distinct about ActRaiser? What makes it like really click in your head? Because like for me, this game is like one of the best. Like when we talk about game feel, you talk about like developers like, you know, Vlambeer, right?
They've
mm-hmm. got, you know, if you're not familiar, they did like Ridiculous Fishing and Nuclear Throne and
Luthrausers. Yes.
They're the masters
of Luthrausers.
Luthrausers. There's actually a really great talk by Jan Willem, what's his name?
JWAP
is his Twitter handle, @JWAP. He has a really great talk about game feel in general. It's like, you know, 30 or 40 tips to improve your game feel or something. I forget what it's called.
Yeah, you get to watch it. Like, one of them that I always remember is make the bullets bigger.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite.
So he goes, like, step by step, and he's, like, he's building a game with just, like, a little player character, and he's adding things that just make the game feel better, and it's making the bullets bigger, it's adding a muzzle flash, it's adding, like, camera kickback, and all these little things that just move the needle closer and closer to the game feeling really, really good.
Yeah. The explanation of like how they do the camera kickback in Nuclear Throne actually I think is really fun and particularly appropriate, where it's so particular, it's like 75% of like the distance based on it's, I don't know, it's like a very specific set of statistics, but it makes sense, it feels like recoil then.
Yeah.
But it's also a very like brutal, simple effect of just jiggling the camera back a certain ways depending on the direction that you're aiming. Simplicity, it's amazing.
But it's not like, you can't necessarily take that 75%,
yeah,
you know, and apply it to any other game.
I actually think every game you have to have 75% of camera movement upon
yeah.
firing the bullet.
Yeah.
So if your game has a bullet, then good job, you're making a video game. And if it doesn't, then you need to think about what you're doing, because you're probably not making a video game.
Yeah.
And you gotta set it to 75% recoil.
Capital V video game.
Totally. No, I think the thing that makes ActRaiser for me is the animations.
Mm.
That they have very few frames, and the frames, each one of them is so important. They remind me of Street Fighter II animations,
mm-hmm.
that they're just so immediate. And they actually like make the game feel more deliberate, just because you have such a tight marriage between pressing the rec button and like getting this really beefy almost a clunk out of your sword swing. You're swinging a sword and it's like
yeah.
you're swinging a club almost.
Well, it's really responsive too. Like, you press
yeah.
the rec button, your sword, it does the thing it's supposed to do. As opposed to like other games where like, you know, we were just reading the Shadow of the Colossus boss fight book,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Sutner, the author of the book, was talking about Shadow of the Colossus and game feel, and how the creator of Shadow of the Colossus, what's his name? So you're put on the spot and you can't...
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Fumito Ueda?
Ueda, yeah. So Ueda was talking about how responsiveness in the game is not just pressing the button and the actor in the game doing the thing you want it to do. It's
right.
about... expectations, right? So in Shadow of the Colossus, you press the button and it's like he's like raising his sword up,
mm-hmm.
and then you let go of the button and he slams it down. But so much of that game, like the feeling of Shadow of the Colossus, is about frustration and
mm-hmm.
anticipation and like angst
and holding on for dear life
yeah.
too. So like when you're like holding the button, you're like smashing your controller,
and it actually like it's
making it
painful.
Sweaty. It, yeah, you're getting blisters.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I played that game for the first time and. We were in Minneapolis. It was January. It was freezing cold. We were like completely bundled up inside the house visiting good friends of ours. We love going to cold places, so this was really exciting for us. We're like, oh my gosh, it's so cold. And we played a lot of video games. I played a lot of... I actually played a lot of PC Engine games. For some reason, I brought my PC Engine.
Mm.
I thought that was a really weird choice that I made on vacation to bring a video game console with me, but it was so adorable. How could I not? But I also played a lot of Shadow Colossus for the first time because somebody was like, well, it was my very good friend Max, was like, you have to play this. This is so good. And I think what he meant actually was, this is so sad because just sat there like in the dead of winter, completely
yeah.
like swaddled in all of my jackets, like making my controller just sweat with how tightly I was gripping it, trying not to fall off of these colossus and just shouting over and over again,
yeah.
performing what is ultimately is a gratuitously horrible thing
just
over and over.
Shivering and bundling yourself up and
yeah.
thinking about what you've done.
Yeah, just losing my humanity gradually in Minneapolis.
Yeah. But it's amazing that a game like that can do that to you, right? Like that, you know, like rereading, like I love the Boss Fight Books series,
right?
For this, right? Because it's like, if you haven't checked it out, Boss Fight Books was a Kickstarter that was just kicking off a series of books based on games, but it's not necessarily a history of the games. It's more like an experiential playthrough and retelling of the games mixed with history.
It's like a critical encounter with a game, like, but filtered through the lens of like being a person playing a video game.
Yeah, it's like the series of books based on records, the 33 and a third series. Is it called 33 and a third?
I think so.
Okay. I think that's accurate.
They're yellow, right?
No. Yeah.
Are they yellow?
Mm.
White and yellow?
Might be brown.
Oh.
I don't know.
I'm like 0 for 2 here for remembering accurately. First the super effects chip, and now colors.
Yeah, you might get
my knowledge is just draining out of my head.
You might get a color blindness check.
That's true.
Mm. So
I might not appear on the next episode of Super Best Buds.
I kind of want to be sick. So the book series is great for that, right? It's just it's somebody's retelling of it, and it's like, yeah, like. You probably played these games before, right? You probably played Shadow of the Colossus, and you probably played, you know, Baldur's Gate or Earthbound or Super Mario Bros. 2. Like, everybody's played Super Mario Bros. 2. And it might not necessarily sound interesting to read somebody's playthrough of a game that you know so intimately, but it is very, very interesting. Very, very fascinating. But what it does is it does a deep dive into what these games mean to individuals, but through that, through the game field... It's like this universal sort of feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Shadow of the Colossus is only ever going to be sad to you.
Probably, yeah.
Like, I don't know anybody that would be, like, not sad. Like, super happy and exultant, like, after beating, like, the 16th Colossus. Colossi?
I think
it's Colossus.
Colossus. Mm-hmm. If there's only one of them. At that point, there is, because you've killed all the others. Because
there's 16, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and because if you want to feel a different way, you're probably not going to pick up Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I even feel sad playing Monster Hunter, which is another one of those, like, really good, not necessarily a direct relationship to pressing the button and having the thing happen
yeah.
games. Or animation priority games, if
oh,
you
sure.
will.
Yeah. And no, so that's interesting, because I just started playing Bloodborne. Right?
Yes.
And Kyle and I have been friends for a number of years now, and he is, like I said in the beginning of the podcast, into different games than I am, and it's very fascinating because I respect him and love him as a human being.
Right.
But I don't understand the Dark Souls thing. I don't understand the Monster Hunter thing. And all what it finally took, like after me, I think I bought Monster Hunter for the DS, the 3DS, the new 3DS. I bought a new 3DS.
A Monster Hunter 3DS.
A Monster Hunter 3DS. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to play this game. Kyle and I are finally going to relate on the Monster Hunter level. And I couldn't get into it. And it took us going camping where we had
yeah.
like a dedicated period of time to actually play Monster Hunter, and you had to be my guide, right? But that game has such a distinct game feel, and
it really does.
And games like Bloodborne and Dark Souls, animation priority games, like, that is such a weird game feel from anything else I've ever played.
Yeah, and really, like, antithetical almost to what I love about ActRaiser, actually.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, we started off by praising the responsiveness and the immediateness, the chunkiness of ActRaiser's animations and how every frame's important. Mm-hmm. And in Monster Hunter, you wind up a sword swing, it's like, you make a cup of tea and wait for things to land. It, like, takes a while for things to happen in that game. You have to be sure you're going to press the rec button before you press it.
Well, that's really interesting, though, because, like, in the Super Nintendo era and the NES era, like, you didn't have the idea that you had truth in materials, right? Mm-hmm. You didn't have the feeling of, like, it was a replication of the feeling of this sword, you know, being a badass sword, but you didn't feel the weight of that sword.
Sure.
You didn't feel that it was made out of, like, hardened steel, you know, like...
No, totally. Like, swinging the Master Sword versus swinging your father's sword in A Link to the Past, it's the same feeling.
Yeah.
It's like you're... You know, it's gonna go whip, 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 whip.
And
like,
sometimes it shoots lasers.
Yep. Whip, whip.
Yeah. But in, like, Monster Hunter or something, you have a hammer, you know? And it's like, you feel the crazy, like, leverage of the handle and the weight of the hammerhead on the end of it as you're pushing down. And for me, that was my big disconnect, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Was like, I didn't understand that pressing the A button or the rec button or whatever button is assigned to the button
ever going to refer to it as the rec button.
That's a good term. It didn't just wreck that velociraptor thing,
yeah,
the great jaggy or whatever, just by pressing the button. I had to pay attention to the way the game wanted me to feel. But that's cool. Like, building an appreciation for that is really cool. Like, getting into Bloodborne, I'm like, oh yeah, no, now I understand that. That's really good. This is very satisfying. But it takes a particular kind of person to lean into that kind of game experience and really understand that they have to put in the time to learn what the game wants from them.
Well, I think you were talking about expectations earlier too, and like it's hard to switch your expectations, like, from like playing an action game like Devil May Cry or like something where like really the fluidity of the recent Batman game is a good example of this too.
Yeah.
The fluidity of your response is emphasized like above anything else.
Yep.
So like and it has a lot in common with, I think, Super Nintendo era beat-em-ups, where it's like if you're pressing the action button, your character is doing what your character does.
Yep.
You know, this
it's almost a rhythm game at that point.
It really is. It's like that action button is just a conduit between like you and the character, and it's you're allowing the character to be exactly what the character wants to do, what the character wants to be.
Right, you're being Batman just by pressing the button.
Totally, press X to Batman. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you're doing. But if you're playing an animation priority game, like, really that game wants to interpret your will into your character's moveset, and I think that that's a fundamental difference of approach.
Yeah.
And leading the player to have the expectation that that's what's going to happen, and that every misplaced sword swing and every errant roll is their fault.
Yeah.
It's a hard sell, I think, sometimes, initially. To go with, okay, like, you're going to sit down and you're going to need to learn this.
Yeah. But it's also hard as a designer, too, to alter that experience.
Right.
You know, like,
totally.
Like, coming from a non-game background, like, I've only worked in games for the past 3 years, but coming from a non-game background, working in user experience and UI and graphic design and stuff, like, building websites is about reducing friction, right? It's about getting rid of the space between like a visitor or a customer and some sort of conversion, whatever that conversion is. It's either buying something or clicking on something, subscribing something, reading an article, whatever. It's about reducing friction. But in games, it's about applying a appropriate level of friction and understanding where what the difference is there.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine designing a game like Dark Souls or Bloodborne or anything. I could totally design a game like ActRaiser and iterate on it forever. I could design a Vlambeer game if I spent enough time, you know, just sort of tweaking the muzzle flash and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how to do something like Dark Souls, which is so obtuse.
Yeah, well, and also, like, I think it's the game equivalent of sitting down with your friends, like, and saying, hello, everyone, thank you for coming to dinner with me tonight. We are going to learn to play a new board game.
Right. And no, absolutely.
Here's your instruction booklet, and here's your character sheet, and it's like, here, let me give you a little bit of a background. Just, you have to be in a particular mindset to enter into that kind of evening, and I love playing board games,
yeah.
But imagine just kind of having that just dropped on you of...
Well,
a
lot of people don't think of video games like that anymore, you know, and that's, like, in the game that I'm working on right now, like, I'm teaching people things, right? And so I'm thinking about the best way to possibly teach them things, and I'm discovering in my testing that there are people who lean into the game like that, and they're like, okay, I'm willing to learn, and there are people who just encounter it like they've just, you know, they're eating some candies or something like that, right?
Right.
Which is fine.
Bitten into the wrong jelly bean, and you're like, wow.
You're like, okay, I'm done. But so much of learning a game is having that game experience sort of explained to you in a way that makes sense. And board games are a great example of that, where you sit down to learn a new board game and you expect to not have fun.
Right.
The first game, at least.
Oh, right? Totally.
You're like, okay, I'm gonna muddle my way through. Right? There's going to be someone there who's going to reassure me and pat me on the head and tell me it's okay, I'll figure it out the next game. But I know that I'm going to have fun in the future. I might not have fun now, but I'll have fun in the future. And that's a very... Mm-hmm. That's almost a mature way to approach games, too. There's delayed gratification there.
Sure, sure.
You know?
And there's also the understanding when you're sitting down to learn a board game that you don't understand everything about what that system has to offer you the first time or the second time or the third time that you play it.
You remove ego from the situation.
Yeah, you're like, this is not my... Like, this is not the game's fault, this is my fault right now because I don't understand this.
Right.
I think that it's probably, like, because there's, with a video game, like, we have the joy of, you know, realistic representation of fantastical actions and characters on the screen. So the video game says to you, like, you've got this. You've flown a spaceship before.
Yeah.
Who hasn't?
Yeah.
Like, we're about to do that now. You know what you're getting into. Sit back and relax. This is going to be fun. Whereas, like, with a hex-based spaceship game, like, on your table, you don't have that reassuring voice.
Yeah. And balancing that stuff is very difficult. So, like, how do you approach something like... So, Kyle created a game called Fjords, which I don't know if it's actually, like, Google searchable very much. Like, I don't know if there's a space in between each individual letter.
The best way to find it, I think, is to type Fjords with three S's.
Okay, three S's on the Fjords.
Yeah, Fjords.
So, like, when you were building Fjords, were you going for a distinct game feel, or did you just sort of muddle your way through and then stumble upon a game feel?
I would say that Fjords is very much a muddling game. Like, it started with me developing a set of tools that I wanted to use in the game.
Right.
So all of the, like, different... Because it's a game of switching player abilities and changing the way that you move throughout the game world. So
yeah.
I just made 10 interesting ways to modify how the player moves through the world.
Yeah.
And I did that all on one screen. And a lot of the limitations of Fjords, like, a lot of design decisions were made for me since I was working in a very specific color palette. And because I was doing something as part of the ShareCart 1000 that had a set color palette and a set of parameters that you had to do if you were making a game. Didn't have to, but chose to. I love limitations, so I was all on board.
Constraints are great.
Yeah, so, but it really, like, I made 10 different ways to modify how the player moved, and I made sure that none of them involved jumping, because jumping, I'm not very good at programming, so jumping is hard for me to get to feel right, actually, so I did not include jumping in Fjords. That was the only thing that I decided from the beginning. I was like, no jumping, because I'm bad at it. And
Fjords are very high too. When you think about fjords, the geological phenomenon,
right,
wouldn't be able to jump.
I remember when the name came to me. Actually, I was walking from the ferry, past the buses that pick people up from the ferry, and we were going to work. And I was, like, surrounded by water and boats, and I thought, you know, an interesting geological formation where you might encounter both water and boats is a fjord, so that's going to be in Fjords. It's just a good word, too. It's a really good word.
That's good.
Yeah, but I made 10 different things, and then I made each of those feel, like, as I made them, they started to feel complementary. Like, I have always been inspired by Commodore 64 games, and by having like really discrete video game actions that kind of stop time while they're happening.
Mm.
So the Fjord's grappling hook, where you shoot out a grappling hook and you can't move or interrupt it, and it like goes up and like you're just stuck while this happens. Like, I love the fact that using the grappling hook is this really like time stops, and you wait for it to conclude and then you can move again. So
yeah.
So
that's a very distinct game feel, right? And that like these are all intentional decisions that you made along the line based on constraints, but because you had kind of an idea as you muddled through what kind of game you wanted it to be.
Yeah. Well, and I think also there was a little bit of a sculpting feel to it, that the more that you make prototypes and you kind of feel what the prototype wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was making Fjords, like, I wanted it to be very vertical. I was actually playing a lot of Dark Souls at the time, which has very vertical level design. And so the feeling of the environment was really important to me, and I wanted to make sure that the player took a long time to get across each screen, and so that made some decisions for me. I didn't do things that were easy for the player to cover a lot of ground quickly, because that would have minimized the impact of the landscape on each of one of my screens.
Right.
I wanted the player to really spend a lot of time like meditating on and ruminating in these different landscapes, and to feel very small. So I made all of the movements and Fjords not very effective. Like, really, it takes a long time to walk and fall and grapple hook your way across the landscape.
I feel like we're really privileged now to live in a world where we're so literate about games. We have so much time between, you know, the beginning of video games and now, that we can actually intentionally do things like that. Even if we just muddle through, we still have an intentional game feel. You know, you look back at games like ActRaiser, or, you know, a lot of the earlier Capcom games like Mega Man, the whole Mega Man series. You know, like, every individual Mega Man game 1 through 6 for the NES was done in 3 months. You know,
right.
Like, they didn't have time to be intentional about much, but they landed on a game feel, right? And now we can build upon that previous work and build something completely intentional and completely authored to speak to an audience for a particular feeling.
Right. Well, and I think too that, like, short of making intentional decisions at every step of the way, that if you just shoot for consistency and keep asking yourself, like, does this communicate well with everything else that's already in the game?
Yeah.
Like, that you'll land on a game feel that feels logical and consistent to the player if you do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a matter of just making something and stepping back and, like, seeing, like, what it is.
The consistency is so important in, like, everything in life. Everything in life. It's crazy. So,
especially parenting.
The parenting.
I'm like 100% consistent as a parent. I'm so good at it. I never say contradictory things.
I don't, I think that might have been a contradictory thing.
It's just like the systems that I establish, like, in our house, like, for, like, really equitable conversations between, like, myself and my child, like, they're completely consistent and unerring.
Yeah. So, that said, the Secret Best Friends Club will attempt to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we'll be able to maintain any sort of consistent schedule, but we will try to do this when we can. The goal is to just sort of record one when we feel like it, and then upload it, and then see how you guys respond to it. So we have a couple ways to contact us if you want to chat. One thing I like to do in my previous podcast was read mailbag letters. So I've set up an email account, mailbag@secretbestfriendsclub.com.
We'll print each of them out and put them into a bag prior to reading them, so you'll get to hear the rustling of the bag.
And whoever gets their letter read, we will actually ingest the paper version of that letter.
Yes.
We'll swallow it and then digest it. You can also tweet back at us, send us a Twitter tweet.
A tweet.
You can tweet us.
Tweet at us.
At Secret Best Cast, because Secret Best Friends Club was too long for Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You can also like us at facebook.com/Secret Best Friends Club. There are so many more social networks these days. So many more avenues.
We should get on that peach.
Yeah.
On that peach. You can find us on lo.com/secretbestfriendsclub/secretbestfriendsclub1 /index.html.
index.php.
Right.
We need to run some server code.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer if you liked us on Facebook, actually. I think that's going to be the primary avenue. I don't know. But subscribe. We'll be doing more of these in the future. Tell your friends, retweet things, and definitely interact.
Interactivity is very important for video games and life.
That is true. It's actually required. So, from Secret Best Friends Club, thanks for listening.
Thank you.